Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, I hope you're doing well. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Everyone, make sure you grab a chair. We're going to have some fun times. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Hoping that this podcast recording goes swimmingly. We're going to have some fun. Before we get into basketball, because we have basketball things to discuss. So SummerSlam, right? I was a little frustrated by the end, dude. And I just want to know where they're going from here. Go ahead.
Every time Jey Uso fights Roman Reigns, Jimmy Uso costs him.
It's given hater. I don't know what's
going on. There's only one person who didn't want him to be the tribal chief, and Roman told that man that, and he didn't believe it.
That's true. And so now we got proof, and now this just sets up, I guess, Jimmy versus Jey in a few months. We'll see how it goes.
Down since day one or hating since day one? Who's to say?
The Jimmy, apparently. We're going to see what happens on that front.
Also, salute to Roman Reigns for already being on vacation.
Oh, no. He pulled a Brock. That man walked up the ramp and went straight on the plane. And he is on a beach. I respect that immensely. We will not see that man until 2024.
Well, acknowledge him, Nikias.
Yeah, he won that one. At least he didn't, tap out in the middle of a match like some other time. Anyway, to the basketball. Actually,
wait, real quick, before we get to basketball, can I borrow your free throw?
Sure.
Stronger left hand, Cody Rhodes or Jaylen Brown?
Which one has the adrenaline?
All right.
So, let's go. We'll start with some NBA news before we get into some W talk. Start with Ricky Rubio, who released a statement. He is stepping away from professional basketball for a bit to focus on his mental health. His statement reads, "I have decided to stop my professional activity to take care of my mental health. I want to thank all the support I've received from the Spanish national team to understand my decision. Today, family makes more sense than ever. Thank you. I would ask that my privacy be respected so that I can face these moments and be able to give more information when the time is right." So first and foremost, I hope Ricky Rubio is okay, and I hope he takes all the time that he needs. And like, once I saw that, my mind immediately went to, man, he's been not just in the NBA for a while. He's been playing basketball for a very long time. Like, he has legit been a professional basketball player / phenom prospect, etc. Since what, 12 years old, 13 years old?
I want to say it was 14, because I remember being in high school and he started to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And that was a long time ago. And so that's where I was like, hey, you know what? As you said, he's been doing this for a long time. And yeah, it's been an up and down road, injuries, trying to find the right spot. It's just been a lot. So I hope he's all right, man.
Yeah. Like, that's just on the basketball side. Again, no real inkling into what's happening in his personal life. So again, I hope he is okay. He's able to take whatever time is necessary to, figure things out, become better. Beyond that, Anthony Davis and the Los Angeles Lakers agreeing to a 3-year, $186 million extension, which is the richest extension in NBA history at this point. So some record-setting stuff as the cap continues to rise, et cetera, et cetera. Congrats to Anthony Davis. Beyond, wow, that's a lot of money. What were your initial thoughts with the Anthony Davis re-signing?
Thought the Lakers had to. They got a window. LeBron's still here. For LeBron to work, we need Anthony Davis. I felt like it to me. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something? Should I be galaxy braining it? I don't know.
I wouldn't say galaxy braining it. I just think I'm with you. Like, they had to do it. And he's also very good. Like, we just saw, like, when healthy, which has been just the moniker that you had with Anthony Davis throughout his NBA career. But when healthy, he's one of the most dominant players in basketball, period. And put together a defensive player of the year worthy season in his minutes last year. Ultimately didn't win it, didn't play enough, but he did that, and then we saw what he did during the postseason run, where he just destroyed worlds on the defensive end. And so with LeBron in this stage, like, you want someone that can take on more offensive ownership. So I'm curious to see what that looks like for Anthony Davis. Second year under Darvin Ham. See what kind of shifting happens there. We're going to get like a full season with this new roster after they remade it last year, midway through. More spacing on the floor. What does that do for Anthony Davis and his offensive exploits? What is the pick and roll attack going to look like with D'Angelo Russell back in tow for however long he's going to be there? So I'm curious to see like how the offense, if at all, is remade under Anthony Davis or in Anthony Davis's image. I'm curious about that portion. The second part, as I mentioned, like one, the money, the years, the health concerns. Does this mean, like, I guess, what position is he playing? I think we can both agree, like, the Lakers are at their best when he's at the five, but there's also a fine balance to strike between how much we're playing AD at the five in light of how his body typically handles that over extended stretches. And I think back to, like, the Jackson Hayes signing and, you know, what they're trying to do there. Like, we saw some of the lineup lineup combination that they threw out in the front court throughout the postseason run, second half of the year. So I'm just kind of curious to see, like, how they are going to strike the balance between keeping Anthony Davis healthy throughout the duration of this, optimizing him more offensively, and then also just the lineup optimization, if that makes sense. Like, can they find that right balance between, okay, maybe he's playing the five 65% of his minutes to where you're still getting that max effort. We can really spread it around him in terms of shooting and stuff like that and have him at that position without wearing him down during the regular season.
No, that's a good point. And I think it's important to see exactly how much the trades they made and the roster they remade and how much does that tie back into Anthony Davis looking like he did. And so now is he going to be back with what they've now added that should help him? You know, they're getting closer to that formula they had when it comes to winning success. So I want to see where that goes. And also, I mean, if LeBron's a question mark, you at least know you have Anthony Davis for a certain amount of years. So there's that.
Congrats again to Anthony Davis. On the free agency front, another round of signings. We missed Garrett Temple on the last episode.
You know, all right.
Okay, anyway, the Raptors signed Garrett Temple to a one-year deal. The Nets picking up Trenton Watford, which is fun. The Hornets signing Frankney Lakina. The Heat signing Cole Swider. Any of those pop for you?
Well, no, I am desperately waiting to hear your Garrett Temple thoughts since you were genuinely unhappy that we missed the Garrett Temple news on our last podcast. So please take it away.
Like, my immediate thought was like, yo, did anybody like each other? Which, you know, respectfully messy, et cetera. But no, in all seriousness, like, Garrett Temple just has the rep of being the veteran's veteran's veteran. And so with the amount of wings and fours that the Raptors have, like, I don't see a huge on-court role for him, but I do wonder, like, how he can help kind of grease the wheels behind the scenes with things and what that looks like and how he can help there. But yeah, I guess the news in general just upset me. I was like, oh, we just finished recording like 15 minutes ago. I could have sprinkled that in if I would have known. Like, that's just, you know, like, give me the news before we start recording or like 18 hours after the pod. Like, okay, we can move this one to the next one. Like, don't tell me that I missed it 20 minutes ago.
I understand, that's fair. Number one thought was, how tall is Garrett Temple? Okay, this makes sense. Number two was, it's very interesting, this whole adult in the room track that players now have. Mm-hmm. Where, hey, you are of a certain age and you will be fine not playing. Please come help us. And I wonder how much that ties in also to more players going into coaching in front of office. Like, is it hand-to-hand or am I Galaxy bringing it? Trenton Wofford is... once again, another just Sean Marks pickup where it's just like, yeah, that makes sense. I totally get it. I like Trenton Wofford's energy, so we'll see if he sticks. Like, we're getting to the point math-wise where I'm like, is this a camp deal or et cetera, et cetera. Do you like Frank for the Hornets?
I am intrigued by Frank at the Hornets. But we'll see. I think Charlotte has 12 guaranteed contracts right now, so like real chance that he could just make it. And I think if you are losing the point of attack defense that Dennis Smith Jr. provided for you last year, Frankney Lakina is a nice shot to replace some of that. And if you can tap into any kind of offensive utilization with him at all, secondary ball handler, whatever the case may be, I think that could be a fun fringe signing that we're looking at in December, or I guess for this podcast, I'm looking at in December. Like, hey, he's been one of the more underrated role players in the league. This is fun, as the Hornets are insert record here. So we'll see. Like, I'm curious to see what it looks like. Like, very quietly, it feels like the guard room is getting a little heavy in Charlotte. Or back to being heavy in Charlotte. And so, you know, as we did one of the Summer League streams and got to see Nick Smith Jr. out there and hooping it up, LaMelo's going to be back and healthy. Terry Rozier still there. And so I was like, okay, so I'm intrigued by the shot. And I think you look at those guards and you think of Frank, like, there's a very clear skill set that Frank feels that the others may not do to the same degree. But, like, how much room will he actually have? Like, do we see Charlotte trend with some smaller lineups? Did they go two or maybe three guards? Since LaMelo is technically, what, 6'7"? So, like, maybe there is some room to experiment some if he makes the final roster. We'll see where that goes. But I like it, though. I like it. Also, the Heat just finding, hey, you are over a certain height. You can shoot the ball. We'll get you in the system. Let's see what we can do. So, I'm curious with Cole. Trendon's an interesting one because we've had some discussions about Brooklyn's backup center rotation. And it's an interesting dart throw. I think Trendon is a really unique player, to say the least. And if Brooklyn's going to play faster, lean more into Mikhail as a ball. I'm excited to see Mikhail next year. That's a brief aside. But yeah, I think Trendon could end up finding a role in this team if they keep him. So I am intrigued. And then just also on a news note, Spurs guard Devontae Graham going to be suspended the first two games of the season after pleading guilty to a charge of impaired driving. So guess on that regard, the campaign trade make a little bit more sense for San Antonio, at least early on with the backup point guard situation there. They still have Trey Jones starting. So that concludes the free agency updates for the NBA as we are recording on August 7th. So these are the signings that we're dealing with. Still some big names on the market. Lowest of keys. So I'm curious to see like what happens there. I think those names are in a holding pattern as we wait for either one of the big trades to happen involving some all-star guards. So we will see. Maybe we'll hear something soon. Who's this? Anyway, on the W front, there were a lot of games yesterday scheduled around the same time, which is a different conversation for a different day. But the marquee game of the evening was the New York Liberty taking on the Las Vegas Aces. And buddy, after the first quarter, the Aces led. It was a weird kind of game. And then the Liberty leaned up in the gaming chair. And the Liberty led at the half. And then the third quarter happened. And they got the Aces out of there. And then the fourth quarter happened. And they further got the Aces out of there. Overall, the Liberty beat the Aces 99-61. That is the largest loss in Las Vegas Aces history. If it would have been a 40-point win, that would have tied the overall franchise record for largest loss in Aces history. The Liberty outscored the Aces 50-15 in the second half. You can throw in some like shooting variants if you want. The Liberty were locked in defensively for most of this game. Just a dominant, just a dominant display in that second half. I'll concede the floor to you. This is very much a Liberty season episode. They got the Aces out of there. So, Steve, your thoughts, emotions, whatever you have on the Liberty's drubbing of the Las Vegas Aces on Sunday.
Hey, Nakash, you like humor?
Yeah. Like left.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Talk to.
Talk to who?
Talk to me nicely.
There we go.
Thank you. Good call well back, there. Old school dunkers. Hey, it's a. I'm a little conflicted in a sense. Like, I think normally I'd be ranting and raving, but the Aces just didn't have it. Now, the Liberty did their part to contribute to that, but Asia 2-for-14, Kelsey Plum 4-for-16, 17 total points in the second half. We can only go so far. And these two teams are about to play each other, what, three more times before the end of the month? Twice next week?
Twice
so
next week, yeah.
That's where it's going to be like, okay, this is a piece of this. But I think it's an important piece. Mainly because I've had some Liberty thoughts as far as just being intrigued with their journey, I guess, if you put it that way. Having the high-level talent with Breonna Stewart, with Jonquel, with Sabrina Ionescu, with Courtney Vandersloot, the impact of what B'Nai Jelani does for that team, and the way that they built things on their movement. But what happens when the movement goes away? How do you finish games in the fourth quarter? Can your defense hold up? Is it the scheme? Is it the personnel? Is it both? I think this was an important game for them to be able to put it all together, at least for one night, especially against this team. Now, we'll see what happens as they go forward. But last time these two teams played, it looked like the Liberty were looking to like get a test, see where they were, and the Aces were going to deliver a message. Kind of flipped in this one. I think the biggest thing for me is the Liberty's defense.
Yes.
The Liberty's defense really stood out to me. And the Aces present a really different challenge for Liberty in my eyes. One, they have the talent with their guards, with Asia. They got cutting. They got movement. We've seen more switching from the Liberty throughout the season as it's gone on. More scram switches to the point where we were watching the Liberty play the Lynx. And Sabrina was desperately trying to get out of a post matchup as the ball was being entered. So, yes, it's baked into the scheme. I thought Jonquel Jones switching onto Chelsea Gray intrigued me early. Obviously, not just the Aces matchup, because you probably want to keep Sabrina away from Chelsea Gray, which it seems like they did a much better job of in this contest than the last time they played. Mm-hmm. But it was what they were doing behind it. It was the activity that they had. They were working to keep the ball in front. They were working together. There was a play where I think Breanna Stewart kicks Sabrina out of a matchup after a switch with Jonquel, right? It's like, nope, you get out of here. Kia Stokes dives. Stewie's like, nope. Asia sees it and like, cool, I'm going to dive. And Stewie was like, nope, Sabrina, I'm kicking you out again. Those little things tell me that they were locked in. Mm-hmm. Being able to mix in schemes on empty corner pick and roll to just try and bother the Aces. You can see the vision of the size, you know, like, okay, we can contest. We can be active. We can keep the ball in front. On the flip side, I thought the Liberty did a really good job of attacking and being aggressive and driving. Sabrina Nescu, I thought she had a really good game. The numbers speak for themselves. The highlights speak for themselves. But I thought she laid the groundwork early in that one. I want to say there was a play early in the first quarter. She ran pick and roll with Jonquel. Kia Stokes was at the level but dropping. Sabrina didn't really hesitate with her purpose. I'm coming off left. I'm going to hesitate. I'm going to keep driving. I'm going to engage the defense. Kicks it to Delaney. No three made. But you saw that more times than you've probably seen it over the course of this season, where Sabrina was looking to turn the corner, looking to engage the defense and then get to her shot or get to a kick. I think that was so important for her to establish that. So that's where I was early. It was more, hey, it's good for the Liberty to know they can hit these high notes. It's mm-hmm. something we've talked about as far as, hey, there's a really big ceiling here. Can they get there? And what's the floor if they can't? What were your thoughts?
I think for me, it's, I guess, the two major themes before I go to like the Aces side, but two mm-hmm. major things I had for the Liberty was the defense and how locked in they were. And then also Sabrina, you touched on a lot of it in regards to Sabrina, like just her level of intention of getting downhill and also her efficiency with getting downhill. Like something that we've been talking about loosely on the pod, but more so in the watch parties is like me personally just trying to parse through, okay, what kind of scoring season is this for Sabrina? Because on one hand, like I did the stat query a couple of weeks ago, like there are only a few players in WNBA history to take at least 6 threes per game in a season. And Sabrina has the highest three-point percentage of that group. And after yesterday's game, like, she easily has the highest three-point percentage of that group. So she is quite literally having the most efficient, high-volume three-point shooting in league history this year. On the other hand, she's not taking many shots inside the arc. And even after yesterday, she's converting 34.4% of her twos. And so I'm just like, what bounces back first? Or what level of comfort do we see with Sabrina inside the arc? Is she able to get to a comfortable pull-up? Is it finishing through contact, or finishing over contact? Is it finding a floater that she's more efficient with? Because this is a, you know, in terms of that, it's a career low for her. So going back to yesterday, you mentioned the early play where she kind of leads the dance and kick out. I think back to the early drive she had against Kelsey Plum and getting that finish through a little bit of contact. And I'm just like, okay. Like, one, it's funny just for like the hashtag antics, but like two, this is her recognizing, like, I do have at least a little bit of a size advantage here. Let me find my angle. Let me find my spot. Let me showcase some actual three-level scoring. Because we know what Sabrina can do as a spot-up threat. We know what she can do as a pull-up threat and the kind of range that she has. And as Steve alluded to the highlights, she hit some deep shots, particularly in that first half. But ultimately, the threat of her pull-up and the threat of three-point shot is supposed to open up things inside the yard for her. And it more so pops this year with her passing, because she's still very good at finding people. But the scoring is supposed to be another element. And when she has it going like she did yesterday, 6 of 9 on twos, both intrigued by the makes and also 9 attempts inside the arc for Sabrina on a night where she, or on an afternoon where she had it going from deep. That's a very scary blend for defenses to deal with. And then when you zoom out, if Sabrina is having this kind of impact, like we didn't even really have to talk about Breonna Stewart's first half as a scorer. I feel like she had a really good game overall. She was everywhere defensively, but as a scorer, she didn't have it. We didn't even have to talk about it because Sabrina had it going on all three levels. And then you sprinkle in some Courtney Vandersloot layups. And then you sprinkle in Vinaya Jalani in the corner or early offense. Oh, cool. I'm being guarded by Kelsey Plummer, Chelsea Gray. Let me just dive to the basket, get this really quick seal. Get me a nice post touch. Perfect being able to find gaps there. It all kind of flows into each other. So I was really impressed with the Sabrina game and kind of what they did offensively.
I thought it was interesting because you think about Sabrina, it felt like there was more usage for her. It felt like there was more on ball for her, which the Liberty have kind of, you know, spread it around. A lot of Vandersloot. I thought that was important. I also thought the fact that they shortened the rotation, so the big rotation was essentially Stewie and Jonquel.
That was it, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a little different. And that's where I'm like, okay, in a playoff lens, does that make the Liberty even more dangerous? Where it's like, oh yeah, they can play a lot more than they do. It could just be this. This could be the bit. And then with I'm all over the place. I'm trying to figure out what more could the Liberty have done in this game to showcase what they do well.
I think, like, conceptually, I don't think there is. Because, like, even with Stewie, like, she heated up or she got some shots to go, like, in the fourth quarter and stuff when the game was well out of hand at that point. So the box score looks a little bit better. But, like, even with Stewie, like, they opened the play with, like, a cross screen by a guard and get her a mid-post touch. Like, they showcase a little bit of everything. Here's Courtney Vandersloot and Stewie. Here's Courtney Vandersloot and Jonquel. Here's Sabrina and Jonquel. Here's Sabrina and Stewie. Here's Vinaya Jalani catch and drive. Here's a Vinaya Jalani catch and shoot. Here's a Vinaya Jalani quick seal in early offense. They showcased all of that blend. Here's an early Jonquel seal when you don't run anything for it. They showcased all of that. And then defensively, again, you nailed most of it, so I won't hash too much. But just the level of nuance for them as well. So we talk about the switching. Becky Hammon talked post-game about how well New York shrink the floor, and that's going to lead into one of my Aces thoughts that I have. Mm-hmm. But I also think, I want to say it was either second quarter or third quarter where the Aces are running their patented stagger for Kelsey Plum. Courtney Vandersloot chasing. She gets caught on the first screen. Stewie hedges out on that second screen to make sure the catch isn't there. And then Kelsey Plum kind of flares out a little bit and then turns into a full-blown switch with Stewie on Kelsey Plum. Kelsey doesn't have it. She kicks it to Asia. It's a face-up jumper with Jonquel. She misses. I'm just like, ah. So you don't have to do switch all the time. You can blend those coverages in the half court against a team this good and live with some pretty solid results. And if they can tap that button, it doesn't have to be the Stewie chase down block, which a ridiculous block she had in that first half. But it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to be Jonquel with a ridiculous block. It doesn't have to be Vinaya Jalani with 18 seconds of elite defense like she's had. If they can just be solid, let me take away this gap. We're going to take away this gap. We're going to switch this so they don't have a gap. Stay solid. Don't foul. If they can continue to string those possessions together, now they're just playing in transition and dealing with the Liberty and early offense with Courtney Vandersloot as a ball handler, Sabrina as a ball handler, Vinaya Jalani getting downhill, Stewie as a ball handler, Jonquel deep steal if you aren't matched up. It gets scary very quickly for this Liberty team.
Couple thoughts of what you said. And you're right. I think the switching, it wasn't just the amount, it was just how locked in they were with it. Like, that's what I walked away like, well, they're really locked into their game plan, which is funny because we've seen these two teams play twice, and each time it's the team who was absolutely locked in defensively and just ran on the other end that just ran away with it. Because the last time they played the Aces, hey, all that movement, that's cool, switch, it's done, what you going to do now? And then Liberty came back and said, hey, maybe not all the movement, but if you can't drive every single time and we're locked in and not handing you mistakes, what's it look like? Mm-hmm. What y'all going to do? So that's where I'm like, oh, let's see what that next week looks like. Because we've seen each team show what they could do. My second question was, Aces playing smaller plus the Liberty keeping their two bigs out longer, do you think that had an impact? Or
I think it did. I think it did a good job of like shrinking the amount of space that the Aces had. And this is just the inherent, I don't want to say issue, because like Kia Stokes has been very good. But like, I guess this is the biggest difference when you just have, okay, Kia Stokes starter in place of Candace Parker in this matchup. That'll be very clear early on. Like, I think the Aces won the first matchup by 18. No, Candace Parker is not a 56-point difference in this basketball game. But you still have to account for Candace in a way that you don't with Kia. And even as like a hub, because they also just use Kia to go side to side if the initial action doesn't work. It flows to a handoff or a pick and roll on the other side of the floor. The Liberty didn't have to worry about it as much. And if you did have an instance where like a Sabrina was switched on to Kia or something like that, if that was Candace, that's an immediate dump down and we see how your defense reacts to it. With the Aces, Sabrina can hang for a bit, get scrammed out, and then go. And with the Aces not being super locked in, and part of that is just because they were in the half court a lot more than they intended to, with the Liberty scoring the way that they did, and knocking down all kinds of threes, it just got a little tough. And I do think being able to restrict space in that way helped the Liberty. And then I also go to your other point, like even when they weren't super sized up, I don't think we've talked enough about, like, Stewie at the five is not fair for teams on either end of the floor. Like, you, like, that is really tough to deal with. And when you say your big rotation is Jonquil, and then we can just downsize, and in comes Kayla Thornton, who can also just guard up and down the positional spectrum. Now you have Stewie, Benaja, and Kayla Thornton on the floor at the same time. You worry even less about, like, what the guard defense is going to be up top. And with them being as locked in as they were with their switches and with their scram switches, and if you had an instance where, like, Stewie is at the five, but, like, Kia Stokes is still in, now you just unlock Stewie as a helper, which is the best part of her defense. All 7-1 of the wingspan. The Aces just didn't feel like they just didn't have much rhythm. Like, they led after the first quarter, and even then, we were talking through it in the watch party, like, Benaja Lane on Chelsea Gray, that's more length on Chelsea. You got help coming elsewhere. The threes just aren't falling right now. It's like, they winning, but like, it doesn't feel like the Aces aren't really flowing like they normally do. I don't think anybody expected it to snowball the way that it did from quarters 2 through 4. But you could even see in the first quarter, it didn't look great for the Aces. Also, I hope Asia's good. She says she's good. That was quite the blow and bow that she took in that first quarter. But man, I just come out of it more so like, hey, this is a big deal for the Liberty. This is a nice example of what it looks like when they are locked in on defense. Because like, and this is something that you've hit on throughout the year, even when the flow hasn't been great for the Liberty, they just have so much talent, they're still able to get points and win games. And like, this feels like the foundation of like Stewie's MVP case. Because you think, look at this roster, here's this super team, and through the first 20 or so games of the season, it's really been a lot of, Stewie, this ain't working. Can you can you post up, get to the free throw line? Can you knock down the shot for us, et cetera, et cetera? They're starting to find more of a flow now. And I guess as a juxtaposition to that, it was also nice to just see the Liberty got this kind of win without peak Breonna Stewart on offense. In light of how much she's had to carry and save offensively for this team this year, On a night that she didn't shoot well, she was, 1 of 8 in the first half or something close? Neither her or Asia shot well in the first half. Liberty's still able to find it. And I think that's also a really good sign moving forward, that this team can press different buttons. Like, that's the benefit of having as much talent as they did.
Yeah, and that, overall, I think even in the first half, the Aces were trying to find their way. And my mind goes to, I don't think they had a one thing that they could count on, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think they had the one pressure point they could hit consistently. And I think part of that plays into the Liberty, just the activity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You run the empty corner pick and roll. It's a hedge one time, and then Stewie might trap you the next. So now it's like, okay, let me get off the ball. You're not getting the dribble drives and the penetration because the Liberty are able to keep the ball in front. Okay, that's off the table. Asia didn't necessarily have it going. So, you know what I mean? It was just kind of like what's the one thing that's going to get us out of this portion? I don't think they found it. But I think it's good for the Aces to have that type of game. I don't necessarily look at it and be like, oh, no, they're in trouble. We can count. How many times have we seen the Aces have to react like that defensively? Because I feel like they were in rotation a lot more than usual. Mm-hmm. And then how many times have we seen the Aces have to go deep in the clock? And it felt like they were alternating between playing quick and, oh, there's nothing here. We need to keep going. And so I think this is, hey, I'm sure there is someone that receives direct deposit from the Aces that said to someone else, hey, we needed that.
Yeah, that person was Becky Hammond posting. It's a nice reminder that, you know, if we don't do what we need to do, like, this can happen to us. And so it's, again, it's jarring to see that type of loss. And if you just zoom out on the season, it's just jarring to see the Aces lose, period. This was their third loss of the season. And we are in August. We are in August of an extended season from 36 games to 40 games. And the Aces just lost for the third time. Just puts into perspective how ridiculous they've been, but also how impressive this win was for the Liberty. Because if this is the Liberty win 96-88 in a really good game, it's still very impressive. 99-61 against this team that had a little bit of time before this game. It wasn't, you know, the Aces faced the Liberty on a back-to-back or anything like that. Like, they came in and Liberty said, nah. And I respect the heck out of that. I guess I'll ask you, because you mentioned the Aces were really searching. And something that I asked Chelsea Gray about earlier this week, actually, in the lead up of this game, I was like, it feels like Kelsey's getting more of the traps and more of the hedges. They wanted to take away her rhythm earlier in the season. For Chelsea, it's felt like a lot more teams saying, okay, we're just going to put our big rangy wing on you. And let's see if we can disrupt any kind of way. It's not a new concept. It felt like last year it was more so like, you know, Alyssa Thomas would get the Chelsea Gray matchup. It was very much reserved for like a certain team or two. And it feels like more teams are trying to do that this year. Not with much success, as you see Chelsea Gray flirting with 50-49, all that good stuff. But it is a gambit that more teams are going after. I felt like Benaja Laney did a really good job on Chelsea Gray. As we're trying to poke hole, I guess like long-term or moving forward holes in the Aces, like, do you think the length on Chelsea thing can be a real disruptor, or do you think that's still just reserved for only certain one or two teams can pull that off?
It's going to be personnel based for me. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, even with some of the switches they did, and I do think Laney was very active. I think they did a good job of mixing coverages and showing help. They still had to show help at the end. Mm-hmm. So even when Chelsea did get, you know, left, right, finish, there's three people meeting her, but they're there for a reason. So yeah. I don't think it's necessarily going to be the one thing. I think if there's anything you would want to do with Chelsea Gray, try and just make it as hard as possible. It can't just be casual. It can't be easy. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go 7-14, it's got to be a tough 7-14. It can't be you just sprinkling this in while everything else is going. Because when that happens, I don't know what you do with the Aces. Because all the Asian movement, Kelsey, and then hey, here's Chelsea Gray, bop, bop, bop. Yep, here we go. That's where you can't do it. So I don't know if every team could lean in it like that. I don't even know if the Liberty can cash that in every single time and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. It's going to work. It has to be a team effort for them. And we saw them do it. Now, what's going to happen when the Aces have an answer is what I want to see. That's where I'm excited, because it's not going to be that again. Incredible performance. Go back and watch that tape. Look at some of the driving kick the Liberty had. Look at the rotations they made on some of these drives. The help. I mean, heck, Asia Wilson caught it in the post, and every person in a seafoam uniform was there to greet her. Absurdly locked in. What's it mean?
Yeah. Got to continue to do it again. So quick numbers before we move forward. We talked a lot about Sabrina in the game. She had 31-5-7 in that game. 23-6-5-3-3 for Brianna Stewart. Jonquel Jones with a double-double. Benaja Laney with 13-9. Courtney Vandersloot, very quiet, 10-4-6, but she just kept things going. Sprinkled in some easy shots as well. The Liberty shot 17-38 from three. The Aces only made six of them. Under-discussed in this, the Liberty doubled the Aces up on rebounds. A 48-24 advantage on rebounds is not something that the Aces have been accustomed to. That's honestly been one of the more underrated portions of the Aces season, as they've been mixing in, obviously, the two big lineups, but also training smaller. Being able to rebound as well as they have, even with the smaller lineups, has been an underrated key of their success. They had nothing in this one. And this is a team that already was 12th in offensive rebound rate, so it's not like they're generating a bunch of extra chances. not their philosophy. But when you also can't contain that on the other end, it just gets really tough. So again, back to the drawing board for the Aces, who remain the best team in the league. Heck of a win for the Liberty. Oh, any closing thoughts on this one?
The third quarter, it escalated very quickly. Yeah. I feel like that changed the math a lot. I just hope people enjoy these matchups. Enjoy being able to see them. This is fun. Like, I know everyone's going to say super team this, super team that. These are two really good teams on a similar path looking to find a way to win a championship. And we get a chance to see them play three more times this month. And I don't even know if the W could have booked it any better if they wanted to. to where these teams are peaking, not peaking, but, you know, grinding and now elevating and at the right time still facing each other. So it's a true test. These playoffs are going to be fun, man. These playoffs are going to be nasty. Have you looked at the paths? Like, there's nothing fun. Like, the Connecticut Sun and the New York Liberty have had two really good seasons behind the Aces. Their reward, potentially, in the first round is the Washington Mystics and or the Minnesota Lynx.
Ah.
So, tell me how much fun that sounds like.
Yeah, so the team that they have alluded to without even playing them yet in terms of the Mystics defense and their guards, or the Minnesota Lynx, who throw out more zone than anyone. And as you've sprinkled in, like, hey, I wonder if zone's just the answer for throwing the Aces off, which for the Dallas Wings, that answer was a yes in one of their victories. For the Minnesota Lynx this year, that's been a very firm no, but Shel Reeve in a playoff setting could get really interesting. And if they actually have their full complement of players and know what their rotation is, B gets back in her rhythm. She just got back recently and stuff. That'll at least be a very fun series to watch, even if I think the Aces still get that done. But yeah, can't sleep on that Aces path. And the Liberty in the two spot, also not very fun. This will get exciting very quickly.
No. Hey, Aces, extremely great season. Here's Kalia Copper with something to prove in the first round. And you did that. Here's the Dallas Wings, who are tall and beat you. Yeah. But that's why I'm like, this is going to get fun. The only thing I ask, I need Dallas versus Atlanta in the first round. I need one of you to give me a definitive answer between you. Because each week y'all alternate. Y'all literally are both 15 and 13 right now. No, I want to book it right now. Make them the 4-5. Let me know which one of you is about that life and we can move forward.
Friends, you've heard it here, folks. Steve wants the Alicia Gray revenge series. We've done it. We have done it. Also, before we transition to the mailbag, because we have a bunch of questions that, full transparency, we are not getting to all of them today. We're going to continue to spread these in, continue to send them in. Any general W thoughts? Any teams or players that's caught your eye over the past weekend or over the weekend?
It's a little difficult because I'm trying to settle in and I'm trying to figure out what the Mystics are. And what does this stretch of basketball mean for them? Is this a scenario where, hey, we found something with our guards, we know what they can do, now we get everyone back and poof, here we go? Or are they going to have to now reintegrate again and do the push-pull thing again as you're trying to ramp up? You know, that's probably one of my bigger thoughts there. The Sky don't really go away. I don't necessarily know what box to put them in, with all due respect, but they don't go away. Them and the Lynx, they don't go away. Dawana Bonner should send a cease and desist to Diamond Miller for this step through. That's probably something I would say. Lisa Thomas is ridiculous. The Sun are going to be annoying, man. If we get Sun Mystics in the first round, I'm going to be...
I'll be hot.
Real hoop.
Not real hoop. I guess for me, just a general note, it's what, 3:30 Eastern now, as the clock just changed. The trade deadline is at 8 Eastern. I don't know if we get anything, but it'll be cool if we get something. So then I can just be annoyed about it happening as we record the pod. You know, we'll see. So I guess keeping an eye on that. I say that as a really cheap, but also a really effective bridge to just talk about if everything is okay, first and foremost. Because we had like the Skylar Diggins-Smith trade rumblings last year and waves arms wildly right now. And we'll have like an actual discussion about that as we get more information. But if there actually is a departing between the Mercury and Skylar Diggins-Smith, I would just like to see her in Atlanta. Really? She just feels like Atlanta is a good team, and I enjoy them for various reasons. It just feels like, as you think about the Dream in a playoff setting, or even just conceptually what they want to pull off offensively, they really feel like a creator short. And more specifically, they feel like a paint pressurer short in their offense. And I think entering the year, and the reason why I was so high on Atlanta, because I thought we would just get the natural progression from Ari McDonald. She can get downhill. Alicia Gray can get downhill. Ryan's going to continue to improve getting downhill. That allows them to scramble defenses. They can play out of it, and they're good against tilted defenses. And this is the blend that Tanisha Wright was trying to get to last year. And because Ari has just been out for half the year, we haven't really gotten that. So it's more so been, let me get acclimated, let me get myself in rhythm this year versus her making just the jump. And Alicia Gray's been getting downhill a ton. But I was having an offline conversation with a friend of the program, Mark Schindler, about this. It was like, she's getting downhill. She's been very good. It's been very important. She's taking like 3 threes a game, and she, at worst, is their second best shooter. Like, part of finding that balance is because she has to be the one that kind of tees things off with her ability to get downhill. So, like, if they had Skylar, one, she's just really good. But I think she would allow Alicia and Ryan to be off ball more, to attack more tilted defenses, and I think that just leads to a better flow for what Atlanta wants to do. And even if it's not Skylar in particular, if they just had someone else that can just pressure the paint, so it isn't solely on those wings and more particularly on Alicia to get downhill and tilt things, I would just feel better about their offense. But I think their lulls really come from teams that can just keep the ball in front against players not named Alicia. Or if they can just switch and flatten things out, then it's like, okay, what are we doing now? What is the second action? What is the third action? So that's my very brief trade thing. Beyond that, I gave Lindsey Allen the shout out last week with the Minnesota Lynx on the run. I just continue to be impressed with her play. Shout out to Diana Taurasi for eclipsing 10,000 points and doing so in very convincing fashion. I guess it's a nice bridge between the Dream talk and the Mercury talk, because good Lord, some of the shots she made in that game were very rude. Very rude indeed. So props to Diana. Go ahead.
My favorite thing is, I believe, what was it? The Mercury put out the congrats pregame, right? They put the cards out there.
Yeah.
And obviously everyone was like, hey, the Dream only have one job. And I was thinking in the back of my head, if there is one player who is going to do whatever it takes to get this done, it's Diana Taurasi. And I saw her first shot. Oh yeah, let me get in rhythm real quick. Quick flare, deep three, bop. Oh, missed it. Okay, we good. The next one I believe was a catch and go. I was like, okay, yeah. Yeah, we're gonna witness some history.
And boy, did we. We got the full Diana Taurasi experience in that game. Deep threes, traditional pull-ups, spot-ups, rolling off of flares, got some fouls drawn. It's a little bit of everything. Also, some playmaking flashes in that one. It was a really fun Diana Taurasi game. Didn't get to watch it live. Watched it the day after. I was like, yo, this is even... This is wilder than I thought it was going to be. You see the score total. Like, oh, she dropped the 40 piece. That's neat. Nah. That was Diana Taurasi using the old cliche, turning back the clock on that one. So props to her. I don't think, do I have any more general shouts? I think I'm good right now. We'll maybe bounce back later in the week. Have some more to run through. But let's go to the mailbag. Per usual. If you have NBA or WNBA questions for us, you don't have to wait for the prompt. Email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Get those questions in. They have been very good, very detailed, and they have made us think quite a bit. Steve and I were having some pre-pod conversations like, yo, this one threw me for a loop. This one was deeper than I thought. This was cool, et cetera, et cetera. So y'all are doing a great job. We really do appreciate y'all. And ultimately, we love having this kind of interaction with the listeners. Obviously, Steve and I can just talk hoop for whatever, but like getting people, let's make this fun. Like, this
we're is here for you.
Indeed. So we'll start this first mailbag off. Well, we'll start the mailbag off with this first question from Reese, who says, first of all, thank you for getting me into watching basketball in a more informed way, both NBA and WNBA. My question is there a way of bucketing offensive plays in terms of what they're attacking on defense that can make the plays easier to learn and understand as a viewer? I'm new to watching basketball in a thinking way, but I'm a huge football fan, and thinking about plays as made to be cover two or cover three or man coverage makes it easier to understand the offensive philosophy and design. Is there any parallel with basketball? P.S. Thank you for the AC Earl shout out. Wild coincidence, but he was my neighbor for most of my childhood. So there you go, Steve.
You're what? This was a great question. And it really got me in a headlock because it's not apples to apples, but it also kind of is. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the short answer for me would be like, it's mainly about the scheme with basketball teams defensively. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, well, that's not really the same. It's just scheme and personnel. But then I was thinking about football and I'm like, that is also scheme and personnel. So let me not shortchange this one. I probably was overthinking it because of my lack of true football knowledge. Like, I love watching a football breakdown, but it lands in my brain and then it leaves immediately. And then I'm back there on Sunday or insert day here. He passed it.
He passed it again.
He run it. And I'm just like, this is fun. I'm having fun. I would probably say, like, you have to think about what the defense is trying to do. So if you know or understand the defensive scheme, it will help see what the offense is trying to do a little bit easier. And it's not necessarily going to be the same each time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, we could probably say, hey, big in a drop, run high pick and roll. Guard has space. Guard can get to pull up or get downhill. Like, that kind of stuff, you'd probably be able to see.
Yeah.
But you also have the flip side, which is, hey, that big is Brook Lopez. That guard's Jrue Holiday. You don't really have any space.
Good luck, bud.
What you ran didn't really matter because, hey, my job is to fight over and he's going to stay back there. So what you going to do about it? So that's where I was kind of like, how do I... Probably the most automatic one I could think of is empty corner or empty side pick and roll. Mm-hmm. 'Cause essentially that's an offense saying, okay, you have to make a decision. And whichever decision you make, we have a counter for. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going to be up with the pick and roll, we got to pull up. If your help isn't going to be in, we got the lob. But those are the ones where I'm tying that to football, where I feel like there's a direct thing. Or maybe I was thinking too much of quarterbacks and like progression of routes or reads. So sorry, Mina Kimes. I don't know.
We got to get Mina on the pod. We should have had Mina like call in like a radio show. So, like, can you answer this for us? Oh, it would have been a good bit. But
yeah, that probably dribble handoffs. Like, I think of dribble handoffs as like running plays sometimes. Mm-hmm. Where basically, it's just like, hey, we're all going this way. I guess maybe like wrinkles out of the same set. Maybe that's like play action. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I helped you, but I'm fun thinking about it.
I love the dunker spot. We don't know if we helped you, but we had fun thinking. Oh, man. That's tremendous content. I think for me, you hit on the big portion. Like, if you know what the defense is trying to do, it makes it easier to kind of figure out like what the offense is trying to attack. And not that this is a perfect example at all, but like, as I read the question, as I was thinking through it, the first thing that came to mind were like exit screens with pick and rolls. Mm. And I was like, I feel like that is for teams that are either playing more aggressively up top or where the help is really required to be peeled in early. If your defensive scheme is, again, whatever it is, if your help is really required to be peeled in early, that's where it's like, okay, we're going to run this. If it's Spain or whatever the case may be, we're running it with an exit screen also. So, like, you can't be everywhere at once. And so my mind immediately went to, like, Dallas. Because Luka and they just kill teams with different variations of pick and roll with an exit screen on the other side. It's just, I guess it's just different because, like, there are only, well, I mean, with football, like, you have cover two and cover three and cover four and cover six and all this good stuff. And with the NBA, it's like, it's man and then it's zone. And, like, you have different types of zones, so it isn't super dissimilar, but you don't have as many as you do in football. Mm-hmm. And with this many, like, you got the line stunts, and the linebacker's doing this, and you got different coverage rules. Well, if they're doing this, then you're going to pick up this outside receiver, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it gets to that level, and that's where, I guess that's where the comparison kind of falls for me as someone that also isn't super big football brain guy. I leave that to the people that are much smaller than me and the football podcast I listen to, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know about play bucketing. The other thing that kind of throws me off about this is, like, on the basketball side, it feels like everyone runs a variation of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, it's like, okay, like, some teams just run this because they're good at it versus this team likes to cover it this way, so we're going to hammer this home, and this is the coverage beater for this. And sometimes just like, we got a stretch five and when a point guard doesn't get downhill and y'all have a drop big, we're going to have fun. And so I don't know how to, like, marry those two together. So I think in terms of, like, specific play bucketing, it gets kind of tough. I do think there are some calls that just specifically beat a type of defense. Because I don't know. Because, like, how would you do the comparison with, like, switching defenses?
I don't even know if I have one.
Because that just feels like a very pure, like, mismatch hunt of, they're switching everything, we're going to get the small guy to screen. And
I mean, maybe it's like the fade route? And then you got a mismatch?
Jump, yeah.
Throw it in the corner of the end zone? But I don't know if that's apples to apples. Like, my brain is wondering if, like, when you said the exit screens, now I'm thinking about the goal line. Mm-hmm. And, like, the specials, where it's like, hey, we are very clearly doing this because y'all are doing this. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's as close as it gets. But see, now my brain is back to confusion. Because I like, and for me in basketball, there's only so many things you can do. Hey, there's a screen. I'm going to stay in contact with my man. I'm either going to go over this screen or I'm going to slide under it off ball. Hey, I'm mm-hmm. on ball. I'm going to force it this way or I'm going to force it that way. Or if you can't shoot, I'm going to go under. You know what I mean? There's only so many things you can really do. So mm-hmm. that's where my mind's like, it's just kind of more pattern-like. So, I don't know. I appreciate this for jogging my brain.
It's a really good, fun question. There you go. And once again, shout out to AC Earl, which is the real heart of the question got there. Anyway, this one's going to come from Nick. Says, hey, y'all. First off, I want to thank and credit y'all for getting me back into the W. I grew up in Houston and love going to Comets games. It was amazing to watch the likes of Cheryl Swoops, Cynthia Cooper, Tina Thompson, and Kim Perreault up close. I lost interest in the women's game when the Comets folded until y'all coverage brought me back in. Thank you for that. There's so much talent now and the game is amazing, and I wouldn't be tuned into it without the enthusiasm y'all bring for analysis on the on-court product. And shout out to Steve for defending the honor of the 98 Comets versus the current Aces, which aged very well after Sunday's game. Though I think the note was on the broadcast that or is it on the broadcast or on Twitter? Someone noted that the Comets' third loss also came against the New York Liberty, which I don't think it was a 38-point. But anyway, the question from Nick. My favorite player archetype to watch is what I refer to as the YMCA uncle. Guys who can't move like their peers and probably have some critical flaws, but stick in the league with some combination of a post game, smarts, passing, and dad strength. They get buckets with awkward-looking moves that everyone knows are coming but somehow still work. Examples include Al, he was a problem Jefferson, Andre Miller, Luis Scola, and late career Boris Diaw. Who would y'all's first ballot Hall of Fame YMCA uncles be? And as I get back into the W, who should I watch for that fits this archetype best in the WNBA? Thank you and keep hooping it up.
Well, I kind of went with a blend. I tried to think of as many current players as I could. Number one was Danilo Gallinari for me.
Mm, that's a good shot.
That man has the old man game down. Down to a T.
Yeah.
I had Jonas Valanciunas. There's something about the fakes and the jabs. I'm going to hit you as hard as I can. That blend that stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking, like, if we're going first ballot, then I had to go Jokic.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Like, there's a whole lot of people that look at him and be like, I mean, I play just like him. And you just got to kind of let it rock.
Like, bro, no, you don't. You passed the ball four times this run. No, you don't.
I feel like LeBron taps into it more and more on those nights where the knees might be cold, but he really knows he needs to get something done. Like the drive left, hits you. Those ones make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But then my mind went to like Marcus Morris. I know. But what is more old man about, hey, I'm here, throw me the ball, jab, bop, bop, bop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into mid-range. I was like DeMar DeRozan. But then I was thinking about Drew Holiday. Like, he has some old man game in him with some of those post-ups where pull him at the three-point line, bop, 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 layup. That's where I started with. What did you have?
You hit on a lot of that, the ones that I had. There's one name that I'm surprised that you didn't bring up. Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
If we're talking pivots Massive and... L. Jimmy Butler, the owner of the stutter rip in basketball these days. The pumps, the pivots, the step back jumpers, the grounded three pointer that everyone's like, what is this? And it goes during the playoffs and no other time. That certainly fits. I love the JV shout. And now I'm trying to think of the other bigs that have like the funky pump fakes that work but shouldn't work.
Is Kevon Looney, does he count? Or is he just too tall?
Not even that. I don't think he scores enough for it. I think it's what takes him out of it.
Okay. Do we Eurostep past Luka and James Harden here?
Yeah.
They're just good.
Yeah, they're just really, yeah, that's really good. I don't know if they count as like old man strength. Like Kyle Anderson is a fun one for me.
Is that because he's just slow?
Yeah. He also has a combination of a post-game smart passing and dash strength. He's moving people. And we talk about critical flaws. Like, his jumper takes 6 years. That checks the boxes for me.
Kevin Love.
Kevin Love's a good one. We're literally doing the Twitter meme. Just guys just stand around, just day random play.
Yeah, this is what guys do.
Yes. Welcome to the dunker spot. And also,
guys, gals, folks, this is what it should be like. This is what we need to be doing. More of these conversations. Stop yelling at each other. Let's figure out what 1980s player fits in here.
Yes. Bill Lambert. No, I was kidding. On the W front, like I guess my mind kind of defaults to the Aces.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's technically three. I guess like Chelsea for one. I think Candace because of what stage of career she's in. But like why are you not a sigh of relief?
Just to peel the curtain back in my notes, first player under W, Chelsea Gray ? Wait for Nekias to say it.
That's crazy. Well, you've been doing a podcast with someone for a very long time. But even then, that's more so like, obviously, I don't think Chelsea Gray has like a critical flaw or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The closest thing to it would just be like her not having blow-by speed. But that also just kind of adds to the YMCA game where it's just like, I'm just going to get my shoulder into your chest. We're going to wiggle here. We're going to wiggle here. And you sliding with you. And now you realize, oh, wait, we started at the 3-point line. Now we at the 12-foot range. And now you're sprinkling a fadeaway over me. When did this happen? And then also Chelsea has a post game. So like that kind of where it went. Again, Candace said she's not blown by people at the five as much anymore. And obviously currently not playing. But we're talking smart, strength, et cetera, et cetera. Like Candace would count. Trying to think who else fits on. Who'd you have on the W side?
Alyssa Thomas.
Yep.
I mean, all you gotta do, turn the Sun game on, watch that transition, watch the setup for the left spin.
Yeah. That'll do. Yeah. That will do.
I was thinking I put Alicia Gray with a question mark. I wanted to temperature check that one. I didn't feel great about it.
Okay. What was the thought process behind it?
The strength on the drives, pretty much.
Okay.
And it's like a little, it's not unorthodox, but it's not like I'm purely faster than you type beat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like maybe. Okay. Courtney Vandersloot made my list.
Let's see.
I put Alana Smith down. And then I built a category for Sammy Whitcomb. So we have the YMCA uncle. I'm calling Sammy Whitcomb the YMCA lawyer. Or whatever the person is that comes from work to the noon ball run destroys you because they can shoot, and then leaves like it didn't happen.
Not the lunch break launcher. That's crazy. Yeah. That's so fire. Wow.
Man, scar for life. I ain't never tried to get a lick back so bad as I did when I was like 15. That man just went and grabbed his suit and left. And I was like, how?
Oh, boy. That lawyer should have been hooping. He tall as nothing.
Man, that man hit me with so many jab steps that day. I was like, all right, man, I need to, need to get in the lab. That's the other thing. Everyone always likes to do the like competition, like Michael Jordan's competition and Magic's competition, Steph's competition. Have y'all not competed before? You ain't never lost to someone you weren't supposed to lose to.
That's the worst thing.
Yeah. Like what? And then you never like found respect in someone that you doubted first because they beat you. It's like, oh yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. Anyways.
Yeah, we've reached the fun part of the pause. Steve is tapping into the bank. He can remember exactly. You can remember what color that man's suit was, can't you?
Yeah, dude. I remember the hanger. It was one of those wire ones with the like the paper in between it. And he still had the plastic down. And it had stripes. And I was upset because this man was like, hey, I got to take a shower. I'm out.
Like, no, come back out here. We want the one. Oh, goodness. We have a pair of questions from Tony. Really have three questions, but we're saving one for a later episode. So we'll start here. It's a two-parter. Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time caller, et cetera, et cetera. I have two questions. The first is a two-part question, threw in a free throw, too. Was discussing this topic with another dunker friend, shout out David. I was frustrated by Houston seemingly rushing their build considering the talent they currently have on their roster, even though there were new CBA-related reasons behind it, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks signings. Meanwhile, in the East, I was conversely frustrated by the lack of moves from the Orlando Magic, who I feel are actually most closer to competing and could use some top-end talent to put them over the edge. Which young core between these two teams do you think is better from a talent standpoint? Tony thinks it is Orlando. Huge Franz Wagner fan. Also big Paolo fan. So I guess we'll start with that first part. Whose young talent do you feel better about, Orlando or Houston?
Well, I think by default, I think you may have to feel better about Orlando's. I'm sorry, Rockets fans. Stick with me. Mm-hmm. These two rebuilds are similar but different. And I think when you look at the Brooks signing, the Fred VanVleet signing, that felt like we need to pay to speed this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And like, so I don't think they know all the answers of what they have with their young talent, but they know if it's just this, it's not going to be very good. So let's bring some other pieces and hope they can enhance them. And now we go up. So they're still trying to figure out who they are, but they've already paid money to do it. That's where it gets tricky. It kind of feels like the, you go to the theme park, you buy the fast pass, avoid the lines. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what they're trying to get, but they don't know if it's verified or not. Anyways, with Orlando being able to have this emergence from Franz, being able to have this emergence from Paolo, I think overall, they probably have more talent they can trust on a nightly basis. Mm-hmm. I still think they may need to consolidate, but I think you know what you're going to get from Orlando's guys more than Houston's, if that makes sense. I'd probably say Houston's guys probably have the higher ceilings to a degree, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Not to say that, like, you know, Jalen Green's better than Franz or anything like that, but like you could see the high value of what they could do. I think I trust Orlando's guys more. What say you?
I got you. So like I saw this question, my first thought was like, okay, wait, what is the age cutoff for young core? Because like just in terms of sheer volume, it's like it kind of has to be Houston because they got like eight dudes that I like. But like I was like, wait a minute, how old is Wendell again? Like what are we doing here? How are we doing that? I think I'm with you on Orlando, which Wendell is 24, so he definitely counts as young core. I have a secondary question for you now that we're on like Magic Rockets talk. But anyway, I think it's Orlando. Franz is really freaking good. Like you could argue, obviously none of their careers are over yet, et cetera, et cetera. But like you could argue like he's just been the best guy from his draft class so far. And that is not an outcome that I expected or even a conversation that I expected to have when that pick was made. because from reading, you know, smarter draft people than I am and stuff, it's like he has the skill set. We don't know how aggressive he's going to be. We don't know what the shot, how aggressive he's going to be with the shot, and how good the 3-point shot is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And now he can just get you 21-6-4 whenever he wants. And the downhill driving has gotten better. The playmaking is growing. Defense is solid across multiple positions. Like, he's a really complete wing. He's really good. So I would say, like, at minimum, I think Orlando has the best player among the young cores right now in Franz. And I love Wendell. I think this is going to be a really fun question to revisit in like 6 months.
Oh, I'm going to be wrong. There's a chance I could be loud and wrong from day one of the season. If Fred and Dylan Brooks steady things out and Jalen now has an easier job and he takes a leap and Jabbar continues this run and also Tari Eason, and then, hey, here's Thompson and Whitmore doing things. Yeah, it could get kind of tough for you, boy.
Yeah.
I could be blasted right off to Bad Take Mountain.
Bad Take Mountain. I can't. I tell you. I'm in. He's going to be so good. Like, I think Wimby's going to be the best player in his class if he's healthy. It's August 7th, so my mind could change. I feel like Amin's going to be my favorite player from this draft class, almost regardless of what happens. Just with how he plays and the unique athleticism, the passing vision, flying around on defense. I think he's going to be my favorite player to watch, I think. And I think his inclusion to Houston's core alone is enough for me to be like, it might be Houston by a hair if they got this dude in tow. It's probably Orlando just because they got a little bit more, especially with Wendell in the core. Like, they just have a little bit more seasoning in that core. This is a really good question. I'll lean Orlando, but I have a high respect for what Houston does. Now, I do still have, like, the central, to a lesser degree with Orlando, too, but I do still have the central, hey, y'all got 8 dudes that could be developed right now. Are y'all going to be able to nail all of this at once? Or will there need to be consolidation on your end? But this is a fun one. I like it. Second question. Who do you pick between Franz and Şengün? I know they play different positions and roles on the floor, but the Şengün's playmaking advantage and offensive ceiling at his position offset Franz's defensive upside and switchability.
If Şengün's pick and roll defense is better, I will say yes. Right now, I'm going Franz.
Okay. I would also take Franz. I want to see how much they lean into Şengün offensively. I'm curious to see what Ime does there. I do think if he's able to find one, there's just a level of confidence that he has to reach defensively for this to matter. Otherwise, I think he's going to end up being boxed into 25-minute big that destroys second units and some starting units, but can't close games because of the defense. I don't want that for him. And I've seen enough flashes with him, like, at the level to where it's like, okay, if he can nail this consistently, this is at least the coverage that works for him. That may have a ceiling for your team defense. But at the very least, this is something I can see him getting good at in year 4, year 5, etc. And so if he's able to tap into that, whether that's at the level or if they find him, like, you know, close to the level and dropping back, whatever the case may be, if they can find something for him, the offensive flashes are fun. I do think at some point he's going to take threes. I don't think he's going to be a high volume guy, but I think he's going to be able to shoot threes at some point. He's already one of the most efficient post scorers in the league right now. The passing can get kind of wild, but the fact that he even sees some of the windows that he that he tries to throw the ball into excites me. I'm a big fan of Şengün. I think it's Franz right now. More dependable, definitely on the defensive end. And again, offensively, he has gotten better early in his career, but he's gotten better every year. And like, the leap in aggression from him surprised the heck out of me. And the fact that the driving is getting better, we know he can shoot, the playmaking is getting better, and you add in the defense, like, what stops him from becoming a 23, 25 point per game guy this year with the trajectory that he's on? If the handle gets tighter and stuff, like, what stops him from taking another lead? So it's Franz for me. He also sprinkled in a free throw. We'll throw this in really quickly. I was watching Jeff Teague's new podcast and wanted to throw in a free throw for y'all. Would you rather win a ring or get a max contract?
Give me the max, man. Like, I love winning. I've loved winning my whole life. I've always wanted to be a team player, help my team win. Give me the max. Let me set up my kids, they kids. Yeah, I mean, let me. Hey.
I'm so glad you did this. I've been waiting all podcast for you to make that pick. It would appear that Steve has once again decided against winning time. It's crazy. one of those things that you hate to see.
Oh, winning time. Oh, Larry Bird showed up. Are we scared of the Celtics? Is Kareem mad? What's the point guard doing at night?
What's the point guard doing it? All right, we're going to we'll close this one out with a Pistons question from Scotty. Hey, y'all, I hope you're both doing well. Big fan of the show for sure. I really appreciate y'all's mix of WNBA and NBA content and the level of detail and nuance y'all bring. Thank you, and thank you to the other comments that compliment on the W. We appreciate it. Anyway, up front, I am a Detroit Pistons fan, and I am not rational. That is my favorite start to an email question.
Hey, we need more Scotties in the world. We need more Scotties to let you know, hey, this is what time I'm on, just so you know. Let's make no bones about where this conversation is headed, where I'm thinking. I respect that.
Oh, Lord. Do you think we get away with I Am Not Rational as the podcast title? I feel like that's borderline, but that's funny enough to where it's like, what is this?
That's a good question.
We'll talk about it.
All right.
I grew up watching Josh Biff and Brandon Knight while talking myself into a Drummond Monroe front court, and I'm still here. Yeah, that explains the first sentence. Okay. I can gaslight myself into nearly anything, which is why I would love y'all's opinion on Cade Cunningham, the rightful rookie of the year. I won't denigrate Mr. Barnes or Mr. Mobley. They're both very good. JJ Redick had a podcast episode where he said the Pistons will be good in 3 or 4 years if Cade is an all-star or all-NBA player. What I heard Mr. Redick say was the Pistons are going to be great in 3 to 4 years. I think Cade is a lot to finish top five in MVP voting at least once in his career and probably more. Am I wrong? I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on whether Cade is best player on the championship team good, like I think he will be. And in parentheses, any additional Pistons thoughts y'all have are welcome, good or bad. We've been starved for national media content for years, even though I understand why. This may be one of my favorite questions I've ever gotten.
No, salute. That's the good stuff right there. I think the biggest bummer with the Detroit thing was Cade getting hurt last year. Mm-hmm. I think you were set up to really, A, let him grow, and B, understand what you might need. You don't necessarily have all the answers you want. As far as Cade goes, look, healthy, spent some time practicing with Team USA. He appears to be on what many would call the track to have a great year next year.
The man was cooking, Steve. He was cooking.
So this is the thing where, okay, we haven't seen the best from Cade. Clearly he's improving, getting better. This team is going to get better. I don't know if he's best player on a championship team level yet. You know, I don't want to say that right now. But I do think the ceiling is very high. And so that's where I want to see, okay, what are the steps? What is his personal improvement going to lead to offensively? Is he now leading the dance? Is he now changing how teams have to do their game plan because they're worried about him? I think once we enter into that territory for him and the Pistons, the math changes. Mm-hmm. Right now, he is hashtag very good and hashtag on the way. Too many hashtags.
Too many hashtags could also be the name of the podcast episode. But I am a big fan of Cade. It stinks that he has not been healthy and hasn't been able to like build on particularly what the second half of his rookie season was, in which the efficiency wasn't great, but like lead ball handler on a bad team with awful spacing. That's natural that the efficiency isn't going to be great. But just the way that he was winning, wasn't blowing by dudes, but a strength-based finisher that was figuring out some foul drawing stuff. That was something that we talked about early in his rookie campaign. Like, can he get to the line? Can he learn those tricks, etc.? He was figuring that out. The passing vision is there. The rookie-level defense from him, where he's shining off-ball and also being solid on-ball across multiple positions. Like, okay, this is the outline of someone that's very, very good. I think as far as can he be best team on a championship team good, I think he can be. I do kind of have my brow raised with just his general ability to create advantages. And it's like some of that is burst stuff. Like I think I look at someone like Jimmy Butler, who can obviously elevate his game and can lead teams to to the title game and stuff like that. And he's very much a strength-based winner offensively with his post game, with the drives, tricks of the trade, gets to the free throw line, etc. I wonder if that's kind of going to have to be Cade's portion as we project him forward. Like, he's going to have to win more ground bound, more strength, more tricks of the trade. I think he can fit that because I also feel like on balance, he's a better passer than Jimmy, or at the very least he will be. And I think he's a better slash more natural shooter than Jimmy is. And so if you're telling me that he can become, like, offensively, a more well-rounded Jimmy Butler, I can see him getting to best player on a championship team. And if the Pistons actually give him a team with some darn spacers, I'm curious to see, like, what the inside the arc scoring is going to look like for him, period. Think we have some fun. What you got?
Oh, no, you're good. I was letting you cook.
Oh, okay. So I am a fan of it. Any more Pistons thoughts you want to get into? Because I think we've talked about them having 12 bigs, et cetera.
It's more rotation for me, but I am very intrigued. I know I am probably going to be higher on the Pistons again than most. I got a belief in Monty Williams being able to play or bring some of those sets to this team, get a functional defense. I think it looks different. I think they've got a nice talent. Now, they've got to figure out the rotation. 1,000%. But I think there's a higher ceiling than most may believe.
There we go. I still believe in I think Killian still has a role. I think he can still be solid. You know what made me sad? I hopped on... I don't know why I did this to myself. But anyway, I hopped on Google and just typed in Killian Hayes' name, whatever. Just want to pull up some stats, whatever, whatever. You know how, like, a Google... you'll have like the initial result and then underneath it'll be like people also ask. You know what the first question is for that? Is Killian Hayes any good? And I just don't like that. That's not cool. For it just be like, that's not cool, man. I want Killian to figure something out offensively. I trust the playmaking. I very much trust the defense for him. If it's a pull up two, which, you know, saw some flashes last year, floater, he figures out something. Like, he's just going to be a solid NBA. I still believe that. I don't know if it happens in Detroit with the wing talent that they've added. So maybe that portion of the chapter closes this year or at the trade deadline or something like that. But I do still very much believe in Killian Hayes. I'll give you that one. Another shout out to Isaiah Stewart for getting the money. We will see what that front court rotation looks like. Yeah, I think that's good for Detroit for right now. Hashtag Thompson Twin, also going to be very, very good. That man popped in summer league as well. So we will leave it there. Steve, do you have any free throws?
I sure do. Okay. You do not?
I do not.
Okay. Tanisha Wright, head coach of the Dream, coached the Dream when Diana Taurasi scored 42 points. She played against Diana Taurasi in her last 40-point game in 2010. How mad is she right now?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
You can't keep getting away with it.
Got you. Better ending, Sue Bird or Megan Rapinoe? Yeah. All those years of Sue slander. I got you back, buddy.
I think it's going to be Sue. I think it's Sue.
Shout out Megan Rapinoe. What's funnier, what the Pac-12 teams try to do to Oregon State and Washington State, or the ACC's being like, hey, Kyle and Stanford, sure.
Can I just say all of that is confusing me right now? Where is everyone?
Everyone except for them four is gone. That's all you need to know. I'm sad.
Are we just going to have two conferences in like 2025? Is that the bit?
Nah, we're about to get that Mountain Pack 8 going, baby.
That's disgusting.
Who's more excited for Chris Paul to be a Warrior? Steve Kerr or Klay Thompson?
Probably Steve Kerr.
Okay. Power rank these gritties.
Oh, God.
Sandy Brondello, Udonis Haslam, Mike Gesicki, Kim Mulkey.
All right, well, Mulkey's last by default. He last on GP. Jeez. I don't know what UD was doing. I guess Mulkey 4, Gesicki 3... UD 2, Sandy 1. I don't love that, though.
Okay.
That's a wild question.
That's what I do. Nekias Duncan, what do you endorse more? Two bench players on the same team that are up for sixth man of the year. Two players on the same team up for MVP. The Roman Reigns Jey Uso match ending that way.
Which one do I endorse more? It's probably the Roman J finish.
Oh boy. Then I now understand the passion you have for the other two. Goodness gracious. Stronger beatdown this weekend. The Liberty over the Aces or Ricky Starks beating Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with a belt?
He didn't have to. He didn't have to do all that. Poor Steamboat. That man was yelping. It's probably the Rickies, honestly. At least the Aces had a chance to fight back.
Stronger chair work this weekend. Chicago Main Punk or Uncle Jesse?
I can't believe you didn't throw Jey Uso in here. It's got to be Uncle Jesse. Oh, that is wild. I ain't never seen that like that, man. Oh. Wow. Yeah, it's Unk.
It's Big Unk. What is the wildest version? Getting knocked out in a fight? Having said fight involve sonic rings coming from your body? Receiving double the suspension as the person who did it.
Oh, it's got to be the latter. Because, like, how this happened? Explain this to me. That's not how any of this works.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. That's all I have, man.
Okay. I'll toss just a quick one for you. Which one did you get a bigger laugh at? Michael B. Phelps or Shaquille O'Neal?
Michael B. Phelps got me. Michael. Evander Holy Gills got me. Yeah, man.
Oh, God. I just.
Question for you.
Okay.
What would make you swim that fast? And then we can get out of here. But what would be at point B? That we could
use? Hey, listen here. If Steve's Pizza was on an island. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Thugger Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Thugger Spot community. We're having some fun discussions in there. Join us with our Dunker Spot online watch parties. I think we are watching Raw plus Team USA content later tonight. But in general, we're watching WNBA content. We just watched kickball over the weekend, which hashtag restore the feeling. That was cool. But all kinds of wrestling, watch some kickball. We've tapped into a little bit of everything. Reality television. We recently watched Family Feud. We're just having fun. Anyway. The link should be hyperlinked in the podcast description. You can just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If it's not hyperlinked, then just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free with no shenanigans. Then you're just entering like your cable provider or like your league pass, whatever. It's very simple. You get in, you get to watch stuff with us. We're watching basketball games, bringing stuff down live. We're just having fun in the chat. We're having some surprisingly deep conversations also, which is fun. We just get to let the hair down, talk about the world at large. If you want to vent a little bit, you can do that too. Anyway, rock with us. We're having lots of fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
With everybody saying, Dunker Spot.